Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communication and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, with the second half of my holiday gift to you, O faithful podcast listeners. Episode 157 is entitled, Pitching Lessons from Life, The Rookie Speaks 2. It's about a presentation made by Jim Morris, a man who did something so improbable, they made a movie about it. But let me digress for a moment. Although it's called the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention, involving farmers, landlords, and others from Oregon and Idaho, as well as Washington, much of the organization of the annual conference falls to the staff of the Washington Association of Wheat Growers. Part of that responsibility frequently includes choosing an inspirational speaker. Last year's conference attendees heard from a member of the U.S. Army platoon that survived the Black Hawk Down debacle in Somalia. In 2016, it was a former prisoner of war during the Vietnam War. Those presentations were definitely inspirational, and you can listen to both episodes 106, entitled An Example Others Can Follow, Inspiration from Black Hawk Down, and episode 4, entitled The Charlie Plum Story, by going to the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org, clicking on summaries, and navigating back into time. I know there are people who will read the summaries about these two latest episodes and think that because baseball is central to the story, they're podcasts that can be missed. Certainly that's what I thought when I originally saw Jim Morris's presentation on the schedule of conference events. The thing is, what makes this story inspirational isn't about the vehicle, in this case baseball, it's about the journey of the person the vehicle carried. And Jim Morris made a memorable journey whether you're a sports nut or an opera buff. I'm going to recommend if you have somehow come to episode 157 without having first listened to episode 156 that you should go back and catch up. In that first half, Morris told us about his brutal father, his beloved grandfather and grandmother, his devotion to baseball over all other sports, his ruined pitching arm, becoming a high school science teacher, and turning around a losing baseball team. The winning, however, came to a stop when one of the people who Morris calls a dream killer, the school's athletic director, was overheard by a baseball player trashing the team. Morale plummeted. This episode has been edited for length.
After his talk to me, I get to baseball practice. My kids had heard everything. They told all the other kids the first two games of 99 were 15-1 and 15-0. We did not have 15. What do you do with that when the guy in charge of you and them tells you you're useless? I sent my kids down the left field line. I stood on home plate and I said a prayer. What can I do to help these kids? How can I show them what they're worth? I just said a small prayer. God, please guide me in doing what it is I need to do. And the answer I got was so simple. Go down there and teach them what your grandparents taught you. I walked down the left field line. Not one kid's looking at me. They're talking about nothing. They're staring at the ground. So I started talking about hopes and dreams and goals. And I said, if you guys got to go out and live life. You can't let life live you. Don't let somebody else dictate to you what you're going to do with yours. This is your life. Go out and chase your dreams. Even if you don't know what they are yet, you don't know until you try to do something. 20 minutes in, I'm thinking, I sound pretty good. The kids are engaged. They're smiling. They're talking. I think my grandfather would be proud of that right now. And that's when my 18-year-old catcher looked at me. He goes, what about your dreams? I said, my dream is to watch you guys be successful in the classroom, successful on the field, graduate from high school, go to college, see what's out there, then you make up your own mind on where it is you want to be and what it is you want to do. He said, we know that and we love you too, but we think you still want to play baseball. I said, no, sir, I want to stay married. Thank you very much. But coach, the way you teach us the game, we know your heart's still in it. You teach us how to act and react to every situation that could come up. We know what the other team is going to do before they do it. When you throw us batting practice, we can't hit it. And I said, that's because you can't hit. And then he looked me in the eye and he said, why are you telling us to chase our dreams if you're not willing to do it yourself? I said, you're 18, you need to shut up. He said, if we start winning again, you try out. I went through every reason I should never step back on a professional mound. I was 35 years of age. I weighed 260 pounds. Almost all my kids were Hispanic. Every time we got on a school bus to go somewhere, I had homemade tortillas waiting on me. That is not an athlete's diet. And oh yeah, I've had 9 surgeries. And oh yeah, you will never ever pitch again, physically impossible. What if we win a district championship, coach? School never won one in their recollection. While they've been alive, those kids have never won a baseball championship. If we win, you try it again. So I did what every parent in this country does. For 20 minutes, I argued with my kids. And then after 20 minutes, I did what every parent does. Caved in. If you win, I will find a tryout somewhere. In the back of my mind, 2 things are going on. This is going to be embarrassing and humiliating, which you could do nothing about because you're old and fat. Your wife's going to kill you. So I did not tell her. The only people that knew about the bet were my high school kids, my 10-year-old son, and my dad. When I told my dad, he said, son, even at 35, you're not very bright, are you? Love you too, Dad. But this gives the kids something to play for. If they do something, I have to go do something. You see, when I pushed them, they pushed back. 3 months later, I can't get these high school kids out. We're winning almost every one of our games. We're running away with district, and we're playing for a district championship 3 months later. We win this game, we go to the playoffs. We're down by 3 runs in the last inning, and history would dictate we're not going to win that game. Our kids score 7 runs, hold off the other team, and we win. It's one of the best sights I've ever seen in my life. They're hugging each other. They're hugging the trophy. They're hugging their parents. And I'll be honest with you. I'm the coach. I'm leaned up against the backstop thinking, I am a pretty good coach. And I'm also the bus driver, and I thought, I better go warm it up. So I go back to the bus, I start it up, I look out the window, I see a group of kids celebrating an accomplishment that not even they thought they could accomplish. And after all of these years, it finally hit me. Everything my grandparents were teaching me, it's not about me. It's never been about me. It's where I can plug myself in to make somebody else better. That makes a team. That's teamwork. And then we make each other better. And we surround ourselves with people as smart or smarter than ourselves who want to work as hard or harder than we do. And we want to lift ourselves up to that occasion, not live down here. My grandparents were right. Kid on my team, I got tears in my eyes, right? Because I got kids of my own now and I'm responsible for kids and so somewhere around 35, men start crying and women stop. I don't know why that happens, but this kid comes up on the top step of the bus, my team clown. He sees me crying, and he starts giggling. And I said, shut up. And from behind his back, he pulled out a baseball. It had Reagan County Owls, District 1-2A Champs, 1999. Everybody signed it. I cried harder. He hugged me around the neck. He said, we did our part, now it's your turn. I said, okay, I owe a no. I actually had to go do this. Every kid get on that bus. We did our part, coach. Now it's your turn. For 4 hours, I drove home thinking, your wife is going to kill you. So I did not tell her. I will go embarrass myself and no one else needs to know. I watch all these kids getting out of their cars, tall, thin, athletic looking, brand new bodies, brand new gear, smiling from ear to ear because they're chasing that dream. I look down at the gut hanging over the elastic band of my softball pants, which is not the picture painted in the movie. Thank you, Dennis. And I've been teaching my kids about their great-grandparents their whole lives, and I thought this thought in my head, and it actually came out, and I said, what have I done? And my 8-year-old son looked up at me and goes, "You made a promise, it's time to get out." And I looked at my 8-year-old son and I said, "You're going to walk home." But I get my kids out of the car, we go up to the sign-up table, Doug Gaswell, he's a scout, the kid in front of me signs up, he walks off. The scout looks up and he goes, "How many kids you bring to the tryout?" "Well, I brought 3. And he said, "No, son, 2 tryout." And I said, "Let me explain something. I made a promise to a group of kids who do not believe in adults. If they did something nobody thought they could do, I would try to do something I know I can't do. It's going to be embarrassing. It will be humiliating. You'll get a great laugh out of it, but I'm doing this. I made a promise, and either you're going to let me throw or somebody else is, but I'm throwing." When I get done, he looks at me with this serious face, and he goes, "Son, why didn't you just shave your head like every other coach?" He said, "You're going to throw, but you're going to throw last. These guys had to throw from the outfield. They had to be timed to 60. I have to hit." He said, "Do you want to run?" I said, I do not run." I said, "I'm a coach. I'll help you time them." He did not think that was funny. For 4.5 hours, I had a picnic with my kids. We played games. I changed diapers, and we got sunburned. After everybody had tried out, Gassaway, the scout, calls me out to the mound, hands me a baseball, and said, "How many pitches do you need to warm up?" And I said, to embarrass myself, "None." He giggled at me. He walked back behind the backstop. He picks up his radar gun. He goes, "Anytime you're ready." Young kid catching me, gives me a sign for a fastball. I wind up. I throw it. It's a perfect pitch. Now, when you're 35 and you're overweight, I'm like, that's a good pitch right there. I look over his head, and behind the screen is a scout shaking his radar gun. I do not even throw hard enough to register. That is more embarrassing than I thought. When I finally get done, my 1-year-old's crying. They've been in the sun all day. I go get my kids to put them in the car and turn the air on. As I'm doing that, the kid catching me runs up to me, goes, "Sir," which hurt my feelings. He said, "You threw better than anybody today, son." I said, "Nobody else here could throw." He said, "No, you had him talking." I said, "Yeah, I'm sure I did. Thank you." Shook my hand, wished me luck, runs off, put the kids in the car, turn the air on. Gassaway, the scout, meets me in my car. He goes, "I remember you. 15 years ago at Ranger Junior College, you were a football star. Everybody wanted to make a picture out of." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Jimmy, back then you were tall and thin. And you threw 87 or 88. I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, son, I don't know what you've done your time off, aside from eat. But the first pitch you threw without warming up was 94. Everything after that went up to 98. Now, as a man, let me explain this to you. If someone walks up to you after you've thrown a baseball and goes, "You're throwing 98, let me tell you, there is a happy dance going on in your head. But as an educator, the first thing that runs through your mind when you find out you've been throwing 98 miles an hour at high school kids is you're getting sued. And he said, "Look, you're old." And I said, "Well, thank you." He said, "But you're left hand, you throw 98. Like, don't be surprised if you get a phone call." The kids were right. I drive 1 hour and 10 minutes home. It wasn't one phone call, it was 12. And I was not the first one home. I told y'all, ex-wife. So my ex-wife hangs up the phone, turns around and said, "So, where have we been?" My middle child is 4. It's my oldest daughter. This is the child who's had me wrapped around her finger since the day she was born. Fallen asleep on my chest every night of her life in a recliner. She's got a hold of my leg as she looks up at her mama and goes, "We're not supposed to tell you where we've been." She looked back at me and she said, "What were you thinking?" I said, I'm a man, I'm not supposed to think. She said, well, what are you going to do now? I said, the same thing I was going to do before. I got a job in Fort Worth, a great big high school, the opportunity to work with more kids in a bigger environment. I am successful at that. I am good at that. I am trained for that. This other thing, this dream, I failed at every single time I was supposed to be good, I failed. This over here is safe. She said, you better listen to the phone calls. They wanted me to come back and throw again in 2 days. They wanted to see if my arm had fallen off or if I could actually throw that hard. So I call my high school kids. I tell them what happened. Now this is where the pavement hits the road. You can talk the talk all you want to be willing to do, but if you're not willing to walk the walk, you need to move on. Because I tell my kids, if I throw good, they want me to sign a contract and go back and play baseball again. And my kids go, Coach, you told us if we ever had our dream in front of us, you chase it no matter what. Well, I was lying. So 2 days later, it rained so bad, they had to hand me a brand new baseball every pitch I threw, slanting up to my knee in mud every time I landed. 98 every pitch with my three kids and half my baseball team watching. I signed a contract. It was a minor league contract. I took a pay cut from teaching to play minor league baseball. When you take a pay cut from teaching, you're poor. The first place they send me is to meet the double-A team who's on the road playing Zebulon in North Carolina. The first night I come in to pitch in double-A with guys barely older than the kids I was coaching. I get a double play ball, I strike out a guy, I throw 91, 92 miles an hour, and they're like, hey, he's pretty good for an old dude. Now I'm a dude. The second night I pitch, I throw 2 innings, strike out 5 guys, and throw 98 and 99 miles an hour. On the way from Zebulon, North Carolina, Chattanooga, Tennessee, the kids start asking me questions. It's at this point that I understand the maturity difference between 19 and 35. Kid sitting next to me goes, you married? And I said, for now. Kid sitting behind him goes, you got kids? I said, I got 3. Told them their names, their ages, what they like to do. Now the kid sitting behind him is looking at me and he's totally perplexed. You can see he's trying to formulate a question and what comes out of his mouth stuns me. So after each kid, did you start sewing harder? After 8 weeks, they call me up to meet the big league team on the road. They send me to my home state. I'm back in Texas for the first time in 3 months. Haven't seen my kid in 3 months. My kids are there. My high school kids are there. John Yates, the opposing manager, God rest his soul, led 150 people in the game that day that had ties to me. People who went to college with me showed up. People who said they went to high school with me showed up. No idea who they were. But all these people came to see me, even kids that I coached against. Coaches had gotten school buses and driven 9 hours to watch the coach that had coached against them who made a bet and was living it out. As I walk into the clubhouse, the first person I meet is Wade Boggs, who had just gotten his 3,000th hit, automatic Hall of Famer. They've heard about the crazy science teacher for 3 months. He hugs me. And he goes, man, that is the best story I've ever heard in my life. I'm still a coach and a fan, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, you're Wade Boggs. And he laughed at me, and he walked off. Roberto Hernandez, Fred McGriff, Jose Canseco, guys you show game film of on how to and how not to do things. Well, Canseco is how not to. But these guys accepted me because they knew I was there because I could do the job I was there to do. And I'm living out my dream, not because of anything I did, but because of the people who had been put in my lives beforehand. So I meet Wade Boggs, I meet Fred McGriff, who was awesome, Roberto Hernandez, my best friend in the big leagues. We go out for our first game. My favorite ballpark in my home state with everybody I know and love in attendance. Why did they make a movie about that? I still can't answer that other than the fact that, man, it was a pretty incredible experience being able to live out all that just because of a group of kids. First guy I faced that night, Royce Clayton, was an all-star. I later found out that like 3 weeks into me being in the big leagues, reporters kept asking Royce what it was like to face me. And he finally snapped and he goes, "Look, I'm not the only person he struck out. Go talk to them." All because of a group of kids. You see, it doesn't matter how young or old you are. What matters is if you forget how to dream. If you forget how to dream, everything seems impossible. And when you keep people around you who know how to dream, nothing is impossible. I remember my agent telling me, "You're going to go out on the road and you're going to talk to people." I said, "You're absolutely out of your mind. I am the most introverted person on the planet." He goes, "Well, I already signed you up for a speech." I said, "You forged my name?" He said, "Yep." And now I've been talking for 20 years. A dream I never even knew I wanted until I was in the middle of it. Because I get to meet new people all the time. And even though I hear the news and I see the people acting totally obnoxious on TV, I get to go out across our great country and meet the people who make up this country, who are some of the best people I've ever met in this country. And that's the people I want around me. You guys are the dream makers. If you quit dreaming, we're in trouble. We teach those around us how to dream. My grandfather had this saying, "Remember who you are and whose you are." And for 3 years of living with them, I thought that saying meant, "Remember that you're my grandson. If you do anything to embarrass me, or if God sees you do anything, he's going to tell me and you're in trouble." It took me until years later to realize what he meant. It's not what I do when I know people are watching that makes me who I am. It's what I do when nobody's watching me at all that makes me who I am. That's character. It's my grandparents. That's a group of kids from West Texas who everybody counted out. Those are my kids. Those are the people in this room who get up hard before the sun comes up and way after it goes down go back to bed. Those are dream makers. So if you can remember who you are, you're having a good day. Get up and do it again. Thank you, guys.
Advice doesn't get much simpler than that. If you can remember who you are, you're having a good day. Get up and do it again. Hopefully, that includes tuning in to next week's New Year's Eve episode of Weed All About It.
Out in the country where a woman's called a gal, she's more than a lover, she's a farmer's best pal. We marry them for life, we marry with a vow. And even in the night we know how to plow. Our children have two parents, our children have a home. They don't grow up with no edible syndrome. We're the backbone of this country, the spirit of its soul. Best you ask for whom the bell tolls. We feed you. We feed you.